Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome to this episode of My Big Ideas. I'm Owen Drake. It's December 19th, 2019. The day after impeachment day, Donald Trump has been impeached. Before I get to that, I do want to touch quickly on the big events of the last couple weeks in the UK. Because I do think that maybe some people over here are drawing the wrong lessons, the wrong conclusions from what happened over there. So I'm going to shed a little light on this, or at least give my own perspective on what's happening over there and what's going down. If you saw the news, you saw that, what's his name? Not Jeremy Corbyn, the other guy. Boris Johnson. That Boris Johnson's Conservative Party won a major parliamentary victory. They got back their full majority, and now they'll be able to push through their Brexit plan. Brexit's a weird thing, and I think that people over here sort of associate it with the whole Trump movement, and it's easy to think that Boris Johnson is basically the British Trump because there are some physical similarities and some behavioral similarities, but British politics, at least how it seems to me, is kind of like bizarro world American politics. So there are parallels that can be drawn, and there's similar things in the zeitgeist, but when you look closely, everything's actually kind of flipped. So when we hear over here that the Conservatives won a huge majority in England, I saw some headlines saying basically that the whole, you know, English-speaking world is running to the right, and that means that Trump and the Republicans are going to win a big majority here next year. And the thing is that the Conservative Party in the UK is really mostly like the Democratic Party in the US, whereas we don't really have a hard left party. We have the Democrats, who are pretty centrist, with like a hard left wing that's pretty tiny, and then the Republicans that are kind of a hard right party. In the UK, it's the opposite. They have a Conservative Party, but it's really kind of a centrist party, and then they have the Labour Party, which is a hard left, and they don't have a hard right. So it's easy to think Labour equals Democrats, Republicans equals Conservatives, but it's not quite like that. In fact, the Conservatives in England are blue, just like the Democrats. So that's one thing to bear in mind. The Brexit situation also, it's easy to look at that as this, you know, it's kind of like the wall and attach a bunch of xenophobic sentiment to it, which, you know, some of it might be there. But the fact is that the Brexit referendum to leave the EU happened 3 years ago. And it was a very decisive vote. Immediately over here, people started to, and over there too, people started to try to cast kind of a shadow over it as if it was not a well-attended election. People didn't know what they were voting on. John Oliver did a whole piece on it right after the vote where he showed these clips of, you know, confused people in England and tried to give this notion that the Brexit vote only happened because they didn't really know what was going on, and, you know, no one knew what the EU even was. Total BS. The Brexit referendum, more people voted in that than any vote ever held in the United Kingdom ever. It was the biggest turnout of any election in history. And the Leave won by 52% to 48%. So it wasn't close. It was a resounding victory for Leave, and it was a very well-attended election in general. So this notion that it was, you know, and again, it's the opposite of what's happening here. The Trump election was low turnout, and he actually lost the popular vote. So it's, you know, it looks similar on the surface, but it's really the opposite. So it happened in the UK, that was 3 years ago. And they've been kind of muddling through since. And the Conservative Party ran this election with a really simple platform: get Brexit done. And everyone in the UK is really sick of the Brexit thing. Lots of people who voted to remain just want it done. They want it done. Whereas the Labour Party, the left-wing party, they ran on a platform of, we think we'll probably do another vote to see if we really mean it, and then maybe we'll do Brexit. And, you know, it's not hard to guess which is a winning message, right? Get it done, or keep talking about it for the foreseeable future with no end in sight. Like, so this notion we got, I think, in some of the media here, that this was a big right-wing victory over there, it's not really so much the case. And I don't think it signals that there's this hard right drift in the English-speaking world. Also, the Labour Party is run by Jeremy Corbyn, who's a real socialist. And again, there's these almost parallels. Like, he's sort of like Bernie Sanders, except he's really nasty. Jeremy Corbyn is, not Bernie Sanders. They're both kind of angrily yelling a lot, but Bernie's anger is like, kind of complainy, kind of showy anger, and just sort of a guy with convictions. Jeremy Corbyn's anger, if you watch him in angry moments, it's like vitriol. Like, you can tell the difference between the guy who's just kind of filled with a bunch of nasty feelings, that's Jeremy Corbyn, and the kind of angry old man who really wants to give people health care, that's the Bernie Sanders. And Jeremy Corbyn is a full-on socialist, like actual socialism. Bernie is a social democrat, which means that he wants, you know, some socialized things, like socialized healthcare. It's a much softer and more American position than Jeremy Corbyn. And Jeremy Corbyn's party has been dealing with allegations of anti-Semitism, which he has completely failed to deal with or dispel, which gives the impression that there is actually a lot of issues in his party with anti-Semitism. So he had that working against him. So that's what happened over there. And I just bring it up in case anyone's curious, because I watch a lot more British politics than most people. I actually have watched a lot of the parliamentary debates. And I don't think it's a sign that there's this hard right shift happening. And I don't think it's an indication that, I mean, American politics is already a lot further right than British politics. So if anything, we shouldn't be worried about that. So, but the big news of the week is obviously the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. Now, a lot of people are convinced that the Senate will acquit him. But I think it's a little bit early to be predicting that. And here's why. This impeachment is a very, very clever trap for Donald Trump. There's two articles: obstruction of Congress and abuse of power. Now, the president stonewalled the House of Representatives in their investigation, hence the obstruction of Congress bill. But the Senate, they've got to do their own thing. And so you've probably heard now, the big question is, will they or will they not call witnesses, right? Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham want to not call any witnesses, which is a really great sign that the guy's innocent. You know, if your defense counsel says, Your Honor, we'd like to hold this trial and not call any witnesses, that's not a great indication that the defendant did not commit the crimes. So they all know, you know, the Senate's not a bunch of former wrestling coaches, assistant wrestling coaches, who can't find their jackets. The Senate's actually pretty serious people in there, mostly lawyers, pretty serious people. And so the fact that Donald Trump is guilty seems to me is pretty apparent to everyone, right? Including his defenders. That's why they don't want to call any witnesses. But other people in the Senate do want to call witnesses. First of all the Democrats, right? So there's 47. They all want to hear from John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney. They only need four Republicans to agree with them to make that happen. And we'll come back to this. There are a couple reasons why even the Republicans would want to call witnesses. One, they legitimately care about finding out what happened. Probably not enough of an impulse comes from that area, but there are some who might be moved by that. But there's also the, it's a pride thing, like pride in the Senate. Like, do they want to be the Senate that held a trial and didn't even call key witnesses? The other reason that they might want to call witnesses, I mean, that the Republicans might want to call witnesses, is that at some point, even though Trump's their guy, he's their party, at some point they're each going to ask themselves, do we really want five more years of this guy? Right? So there's a little bit, there's just a little bit that's going to make them hesitate to just quit this guy right off the bat. So, here's why that matters. If they call the witnesses, Trump is screwed. Because if John Bolton testifies and Mick Mulvaney testifies, I mean, Mick Mulvaney could theoretically lie, maybe. You know, I mean, he might try. John Bolton, I don't think, is going to lie to Congress. He knows, you know, how bad the penalty for that is. And Mick Mulvaney, even if he tried to lie, he probably would end up spilling the beans somehow. So Trump knows that if his top aides, Bolton, Mulvaney, a couple other guys, testify, he's screwed. Because he's guilty. He knows he's guilty. So if the people who actually know what happened testify, he's screwed. So if the Senate decides to call witnesses and calls these guys, Trump has to make a decision. Does he block their testimony, like he did for the House, or not? If he doesn't, then they go in, they testify, and he's screwed, right? So he kind of has to. But if he does, then that's obstruction of Congress. And the Senate's not going to be thrilled, right? It's one thing for them to preside over whether or not President Trump obstructed the House. But when they're being obstructed directly, they could just move the articles of impeachment and vote to convict him right there. So it's a very clever trap. It's a very clever trap. Now, of course, they could just acquit him because of partisanship. And I wish I could say that I don't think they'd do that because at some point, you know, their integrity will get the best of them and they'll just pursue the truth. Maybe, but, you know, that's not something that you can rely on with politicians, particularly Republican politicians in 2019. But, like I said earlier, at some point, they're all going to have to ask themselves, do we want five more years of this guy? Because Trump is not popular in the Senate. There's true believers in the House. The Senate, they don't like this guy. You know? They're going to go, do I need to spend five more years defending this guy's behavior? The past 3 years have been the longest years of anyone's life. It's been awful. Do I want to do that for five more years? Not only that, but if I acquit him, then it's like actually on me. So not only do I have to kind of defend his actions because he's the head of my party, I'll have to defend his actions because I'm actually responsible for them. Because I had the opportunity to get rid of him and I didn't. That's what every senator is going to have to go through. So I'm just saying, that's the reality. Speaking of realities, something we hear a lot now is, or not just hear a lot, it's apparent, that there's really two different worlds. There are two different realities in America. And one of them is inhabited by the Trump supporters, Fox News. It's the Fox News reality. And the other reality is inhabited by everyone else. And I think this state of affairs is genuinely disturbing. And it's disturbing a lot of people. But I do want to point out that it's not the first time we've had this two-reality situation. The other period of our history that this often gets compared to is the lead-up to the Civil War. And remember, at that time, a large portion of the population lived in a world, in a reality, where it was perfectly fine to own people. You know, slavery. Talk about a different reality, you know? You're in New York, can't own people. You're in Kentucky, you can own people. And that's fine. Those are two different realities, right? Two very different worlds. And what happened is we went to war, so that's terrible. Hopefully it won't come to that this time. Chris Matthews made a really interesting observation yesterday at the end of the impeachment hearings. He'd watched all 8 hours. And in 8 hours of debate, when every single member of Congress either spoke or at least had the opportunity to, or not Congress, of the House representatives, not one of the 400-odd representatives, none of the Republicans, obviously none of the Democrats, defended Trump by going up there and saying, the president would never do this, he's an honest man. No one defended him on his character. Now you might be thinking, obviously, his character is terrible. But you'd think that even, you know, someone on the Republican side would think to go up there and go, I don't believe the president would ever do this, he's a man of integrity, we all know, he tells the truth, and he's honorable. No one said that. No, it didn't even occur to his most ardent defenders to go up there and say something as preposterous as that. So I thought that was a really good observation from Chris Matthews. One thing you hear a lot from the Republicans is they claim that the evidence the Democrats have gathered is mostly hearsay, which is wrong. The Democrats gathered a lot of direct evidence. If the evidence is about something someone said, that's direct evidence to the fact that the person said that, right? So if someone comes up to me in the street and says, hey, Owen, your house is on fire, right? Then to me, it's hearsay. The fact that my house is on fire is hearsay because I heard the guy say that. But I have direct evidence of the fact that he said that. So if I go to a judge and I say, hey, this guy told me that my house is on fire, I have direct evidence. That's direct evidence that he said that. It's hearsay regarding the fact that that house is on fire, but it's direct evidence of the fact that he said that. And a lot of what's at stake here is things that people said. So the witnesses have given direct evidence to what people said. The hearsay is the Republicans' so-called evidence, where their, you know, their only defense comes down to motivation. And they say, well, the president wasn't motivated by personal interest. He was motivated by generally wanting to stop corruption. But as I said last week, the president never actually told anyone that. So the Republicans are relying on hearsay. Well, I heard someone say that, you know, Ron Johnson said that the president was maybe interested in corruption. Or, you know, I heard on TV them say something about that. That's all hearsay. It's the Republicans who have the hearsay evidence. Just thought I'd point that out. One more thing before I go today. The primaries. There's another Democratic primary tonight. And it's occurred to me, these primaries cost so much money. These guys are all out there raising millions and millions and millions of dollars. And as we keep hearing, it's mostly from small donors. So it's just... And, you know, there's also a lot of big money coming in. So there's money coming from all sides, a lot of it coming from just regular people. And it's not even the presidential election. It's like a year of just trying to pick the guy, and it's costing millions and millions and millions of dollars. Where does that money go? Advertising, mostly on TV. TV advertising. So who gets that money? The giant media conglomerates that own the TV stations. So, did the media have a vested interest in the long, contentious primary season? I wonder. Something to think about. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy impeachment. I think that it's a good thing. You know, we're seeing the system work. Obviously, it's sad that we're in this condition, that we're in this position, but I think we should take some comfort and joy in the fact that there's a system and at least the wheels are moving, the gears are grinding. We'll see where it goes, but something's happening. That's it for me. Good night.